Let's welcome in our next guest. We hire him every Monday to come in and correct all of our basketball wrongs. It is Coach Tim Lacombe. What's going on, Coach?
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing terrific. Hey, last night you got to hang out with our guy JP and actually watch a pretty decent basketball game. I know the Jazz lost by 20, but not unenjoyable until the 21-2 run midway through the third quarter. I actually think the Jazz have played pretty hard their last two outings.
I totally agree. I think, Coach Hardy made a nice comment prior to the game, and I think it's something all Jazz fans can take to heart. It's, you know, this is not necessarily all results. In fact, very little of it is the last, 8-9 games. It's going to be more about process. It's going to be more about guys being in the right spot. And, you know, we're seeing more of that. I think that the ball moved last night. Jazz shot the ball well from three, and all three rookies, you know, between the three of them, they scored 58 points. So without John Collins, without Larry Markkanen, and Clarkson, obviously this is a young group, and they are going to take their lumps, but there were some good moments last night.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about those rookies, Tim. We've been talking about it here on the show today, but really the two in Bryce Sensabaugh and Taylor Hendricks, we're finally getting our first real good extended look at them this season due to some of the injuries and them being more featured in the lineup. Give me your sense for where you see all three of them right now as the regular season is getting closer to an end.
Well, we've seen some great play from all three of them. I think, as a whole, the things that I would say going forward, I think with Keontae, he's had a great opportunity this year, but I think going forward for him, it's consistency. You know, he's had a lot of hot and cold moments, and I think, that's indicative of a young player, but moving forward, you'd hope that that's something, he can get a little bit more consistent with his shot, with his decision-making, and just general understanding. I think that'll come in time. We talked a bunch about Hendricks and, the fact that he really is ready-made for the NBA in a lot of different ways. Defensively, his ability to play a lot of different defenses, his ability to switch and guard smaller players. And he's been thrown to the fire. He's had crazy assignments in his rookie year, and it's only going to make him better over time. And I think last night, some things came together for him. But what stands out to me about him, I think, is just more of an offensive game, more of an offensive weapon going forward, working on his handle. He's never going to be a guy that really breaks you down, but just to be able to start playing off of closeouts, using guys' momentum against them. So it's fun to watch him develop, excited about him. And then Sensabaugh, he's a great scorer. And what I've been impressed with is his, throwing himself in on the defensive end, not embarrassed to make some mistakes, which is going to happen, but playing hard. He's got a special chance. I think his ball goes in the hoop. I think he's got a great understanding, far better passer than I thought. And we haven't even gotten to the point, they did it last night, but you can throw that ball to him and he can kind of become somebody you run offense through in the mid post. So a lot of different good things for him. I think continue working on his body and becoming a better educated and, execution wise defender.
Yeah. Will Hardy's talked a lot about putting Larry Markkanen at the nail. That might be a spot you put Bryce Sensabaugh at going forward, just because he's 6'5". I mean, it was funny to see him standing next to Dylan Brooks the other day, Friday night. He's got the exact same body as Dylan Brooks from Houston Rockets, and Dylan's made a very long career for himself as kind of a tough guy. He's tall enough that I think you put him there. He reads the defense maybe as well as anybody on the Jazz roster right now, and then has the advantage of being a little bit taller. And then he's got some guts to throw some passes, and I think that's part of being a good passer is not every pass Jokic throws is a great idea, but he's got the guts to do it where nobody else does. I feel like Bryce does a little bit of that. I'm not comparing him to Nikola Jokic, but he's willing to try some passes that nobody else does. And if you never try them, they never become a threat.
It's so true. I talked to your buddy Jake Scott ad nauseum about three-point shooting, and he was always so consumed with the fact that Ben Simmons doesn't even try to shoot threes. How are you going to get any better? And to your point, I think that's something you have to do. You have to throw yourself into it. Like this year, the number of times Taylor Hendricks has been, dunked on or guys have flown by him. But, it's just part of the process. It happens to every rookie that comes into this league. I remind people I was sitting courtside back in the infamous Kobe Bryant airball game his rookie year. And, you know, I sat there and thought and watched it and was just like, wow, I can't believe that happened. You know, fast forward, obviously, through his career, and nobody's talking about the airball. But rookies, it's a daunting task to get into this league and establish, you know, an identity and something going forward. And these guys are in the midst of that. It's exciting to me.
Now, with Taylor Hendricks, he's obviously going to be called upon to shoot that corner three a lot. And this season's been kind of a mixed bag for him from that spot. It seems like at times that ball comes off his hand in rhythm and you're like, okay, that's going in. But at other times it comes off and you can tell it's flat as can be. And you're like, oh, it's going to ricochet off the rim. And there you go. It's a long rebound. Is that just part of the development process for him, is just getting it down to where he knows release point, where he needs to get that out of his hand in terms of making that shot more consistently?
Yeah, it's a good point. I do think his shot is flat. You know, and sometimes when it's flat, obviously in the heat of the moment, you regress to stuff that, you know, you're not thrilled with, but you're working on. And I do think the speed of the game makes shooting more difficult in the NBA, the length of these guys. You know, I think you shoot a couple early on and realize just how fast closes are. And again, I think that that's why if you are simply just a three-point shooter, you know, teams are going to really know that. And, you know, the idea of running somebody off the line is really to their advantage, because right now Taylor doesn't have a whole lot of, you know, off the bounce game. But as he develops both, as he gets back used to more of the length and speed of the game, and obviously works on some mechanics, get that thing higher. He doesn't miss a lot left or right. You'll notice it's short. So yeah, it's a little bit flat, but I watched the way that, you know, the Jazz worked with guys through the years. And I think he'll find that stroke. What I'm excited about is then when he does, teams start to fly at him. He gives him a shot fake, one or two bounces, and he's playing ball, you know, and I think that that's where he needs to get to.
I want to ask you about John Collins, who in the Jazz's last 16 games, he's appeared 13 times. No, the Jazz aren't winning games at all, but among rotation players, like real rotation players, not Kyra Lewis and some of these guys who are sneaking in for a minute or two, John Collins has the best plus-minus on the team. And again, it's still a negative because the Jazz are losing every game. But he's playing well, and really since going to Atlanta and he had that terrible game in his homecoming, he's averaging 19 points, 8.5 rebounds, he's shooting the heck out of the ball, 58% from the floor, 52% from three. This is in 13 appearances. It feels like he's figured something out, and I know he's had some hot streaks before, and that's kind of who he is as a player, but whereas I had no idea how he could kind of fit going forward, I kind of get a sense that, hey, this might be a guy that you give another season to see if he really figures out what the Jazz are asking of him and can grow into his role.
He's been great. And I think he and Sexton, to me, in terms of veterans this year, have taken a huge step. You know, don't forget, you know, I answered a million questions last year when the Jazz acquired John, and like, do they really want a guy who shoots 29% from the three? I mean, you got to look beyond the numbers, and there was a lot more to that. I think he's in heaven here with the way the ball moves. And he's found in that small ball five, you know, where he has an advantage, you know, most nights. He's obviously on the defensive end giving up some things, but his offense, you know, the space that he's got and is able to play with, he's really thrived. So I'm with you. I think he and Sexton from veteran perspective have really developed. When we talk about this year being somewhat of a rebuilding / development year. And I think Sexton, Collins have taken that to heart. And while some guys maybe got caught up in the fact they're not very good, they get discouraged, you know, they drop their head, they pout. You know, these two guys, in my mind, just kept their head down and, you know, had an idea that they wanted to get better. And I think they both vastly improved this year just by virtue of doing that.
All right, I want to ask you a question that DJ and PK were debating earlier this morning, Tim, and they were talking about Lauri Markkanen. It looks like his season is over. Ben was one of the people that was reporting this, that looks like he's just going to be put on the shelf for the rest of the year. And essentially the high water mark of his career is in the mid-60s in terms of games played out of 82 in a regular season so far in his NBA career. And they were questioning, is he worth a long-term lucrative extension if you can only rely on him between 55 and maybe 70 games a season? Your thought?
Oh man, I don't know. I think that's why I got out of this. I will tell you what I see with Lauri Markkanen. I see a guy who's really committed to his team. I think he's committed to winning. He's up until the trade deadline, when everything kind of, you know, when spacing became an issue. Mm-hmm. When you move guys that are known for, particularly Kelly Olynyk, being kind of a facilitator, that the team definitely lost a little bit of that at the trade deadline. But I think what I've seen in 2 years, this guy's willing, he's tough, he's very skilled. I think he's improved on certain things that he needed to improve on over the last couple of years. Like Ben said, he's worked more in ISO. I think he's done a better job when the officials will blow the whistle at creating contact and getting fouls. But at the end of the day, in terms of like how he fits, what where his piece is going to be, I see him as more of a number two guy to a more I don't know, a player that can do more in a lot of different areas. And I think with the Jazz, both their ability to move in free agency, their ability to move up in the draft or just draft all the picks they have, you know, they're going to find players to accentuate what Lauri does. But in a vacuum right now, I mean, I think that that's the most honest answer I can give. I think he's a guy that's helping the organization, but I think it always comes down to what's it going to cost, yeah. And, you know, and how is it going to impact us doing what we want to do. You know, I don't flippantly throw around other people's money, just because, I mean, this is really the nuance of the NBA, how you put your team together, when you do it. You know, the pieces that you put together going forward, that's your chance to win it. So I think that's where we are right now. And, you know, as far as Lauri being a piece of this going forward, I think it's, I think it would be awesome, you know, for him and for the organization. But without seeing all the other pieces, the best answer I can give you is I think he's a very, very solid, you know, if not, I don't want to say two, like 1B, you know, because he's got some definite one skill.
The cliche about the NCAA tournament is it's a guards tournament, but I look at Grant Nelson at Alabama, and then, of course, DJ Burns at NC State, and then the two big players, Donovan Klingon at UConn and Zach Edey at Purdue. I'm loving this. I love old-school big guys. Nelson's not so much old-school, but I love these big guys who get into the post and aren't afraid to bang and protect the rim on one end and then just try and get easy baskets at the other side. I've really liked watching these big guys play, and I'm excited to see them face off in the Final Four.
I am too. I totally am. I have one of the four. It's how crazy this thing was. But you, with all that being said, I think it sets up so great. I think the storylines, there's so many storylines. Nate Oates, the head coach at Alabama, I met him in 2018 back at Celtics training camp, and he was just kind of sitting off by himself. And, you know, I'm kind of a mixer blender. I walked up and we started chatting. And so for the 2 or 3 days we were there, got to know each other pretty well and have stayed in touch. And his story is so cool, because 10 years ago, he was a high school coach. 10 or 11 years ago, Danny Hurley, obviously, was a high school coach. But Nate Oates got into the game because the Hurley brothers gave him an opportunity at Buffalo. He went to work there for Bobby at Buffalo. Bobby obviously went to ASU. Nate got the Buffalo job, and the rest is history. But it's just pretty crazy, all the different storylines. But yeah, the big guys, man, they are kind of the story. And it's what's kind of neat is it's not necessarily 5 yards in a cloud of dust like the old days. There's a lot of movement. You know, you watch Connecticut's offense, and you watch Klingon, you know, setting flares, turning around and setting a rescreen, rolling hard to the basket. And both he and Edey kind of are like road graders for those guards. They roll, particularly from the high ball screen, the middle of the third of the floor, and they literally just wipe out the defense and the guards. You'll see it and drive it to their left hand, see they've got an opening because he's ceiling to the right, So there's a lot at play here, but I do love basketball, regardless of big or small, guys you can play through. It's why I brought up that angle of Sensabaugh. I think it makes guys more valuable. And this is going to be fun. Obviously, Alabama, UConn, really high octane. If it comes down to Edie versus Klingon, I mean, how fun would that be?
Right.
So lots of different ways you could go. But I really enjoyed, even with all the upsets and my bracket being destroyed, I really enjoyed the tournament this year.
Well, I also wanted to ask you about NC State here. This is a team BYU beat 4 months ago now down there in Las Vegas. And how crazy to see them have won 9 straight now and punched their ticket back to the Final Four for the first time since Thurl Bailey was playing for them.
Yeah, I hope Thurl can make it down there. We were talking to him last week, and he told me, he was like, I got to get down there. So
yeah,
he can make it. What's the most amazing to me, and it just shows you how fragile a coaching – how fragile a career in coaching can be. NC State was down 3 to Virginia in the ACC tournament. Guy was at the line to seal it for Virginia. And it makes the free throw, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
He misses, and NC State comes down and hits that bank shot from the left wing to send it to overtime. And from that point on, they go to what they've done right now. You know, Kevin Keats could always coach. But, you know, you have to kind of get lightning in a bottle, and they found it. They found the resilience. I think you gain strength. They had 5 times they had to overcome. You know, if they lose, they're done in that week. And I think they galvanized. Well, they got a special player in DJ Burns, and that dude is – he just gets that thing on the block. He reads his defender perfectly, and his touch is immaculate. So I can't wait. I mean, like, that matchup – between they and Purdue will just be it will be interesting, because obviously Purdue's just kind of beating everybody with size, but these guys have some substance and some, like I said, some resolve. So that's going to be a hell of a first game.
And Purdue, great game yesterday and close and looks vulnerable. I haven't seen a single second where I thought UConn looked vulnerable at any point this tournament. I mean, they look so much better and so much more dominant than every other team I've seen in recent tournaments in a really long time. Is that what you see happening next weekend? I mean, honestly, I don't know if there's going to be a single-digit game for UConn throughout this whole tournament.
Well, again, I think if you were to look at my bracket, I don't know if you'd want me to answer that question. But I come on as an expert, but in terms of brackets or who's win or win, that's always been a little bit difficult. This is the way I see it. I see it like everybody else has, like, the 1.0 software, and UConn was the first school in the country to get 2.0. I mean, I just think they move at a different speed. I think they run better stuff. I mean, like, Luke Murray, son of Bill Murray, is their offensive coordinator. And I'm telling you, like, dig into some of the stuff they run. They run a horn set where they literally flare for one of the bigs and throw a skip pass to him, and then play off of a handoff, the guard's coming off the horn screen to the, you know, the weak side, and just playing off a handoff over there. I mean, stuff that is really kind of mind-bending, the cuts, the imagination, and then just what they can do to you. They can wad you up defensively and then get out in the open court. So, yeah, where I sit, I think it's going to be a UConn route. But, again, I preface that with my bracket.
Coach? Thanks for jumping on. As always, 7 games left. Excited to catch up with you before the end of the season.
Man, Jake Scott sounds different today.
A little bit.
Took the day off yesterday.
You had a cold or something?
Yeah, had a cold. Couldn't work last night. That's why JP was filling in. But he's back, pushing through it.
Well, it's great to talk to you both.
All right, see you, Coach. There he is, Coach Tim Lacombe joins us every Monday. Our conversation brought to you by Spherion of Utah. You have better things to do than scramble to find your next great hire. Let Spherion Staffing do it. Visit them online, spherion.com/Utah. That's SPHERION.com/Utah.